His outburst sent them all into gales of laughter, blithe and oblivious, that dissolved their pique against the prince. The swineherd took the bow, carried it down the hall to his ready-waiting king, and standing by him placed it in his hands. Then he called the nurse aside and whispered, "Good Eurycleia, Telemachus commands you now to lock the snugly fitted doors to your own rooms. If anyone hears from there the jolting blows and groans of men caught in our huge net, not one of you show your face. Sit tight. Keep to your weaving. Not a sound." That silenced the old nurse. She barred the doors that led from the long hall. The cowherd quietly bounded out of the house to lock the gates of the high-stockaded court. Under the portico lay a cable, ship's tough gear. He lashed the gates with this, then slipped back in and ran and sat on the stool that he'd just left, eyes riveted on Odysseus. Now he held the bow in his own hands, turning it over tip to tip, testing it this way, that way, fearing worms had bored through the weapon's horn with the master gone abroad. A suitor would glance at his neighbour, jeering, taunting, "Look at our connoisseur of bows! Sly old fox, maybe he's got bows like it stored in his house. That, or he's bent on making one himself. Look how he twists and turns it in his hands. The clever tramp means trouble. I wish him luck," some cocksure lord chimed in. "As good as his luck in bending back that weapon." So they mocked. But Odysseus, mastermind in action, once he'd handled the great bow and scanned every inch, then like an expert singer skilled at lyre and song, who strains a string to a new peg with ease, making the pliant sheep-gut fast at either end, so with his virtuoso ease Odysseus strung his mighty bow. Quickly his right hand plucked the string to test its pitch, and under his touch it sang out clear and sharp as a swallow's cry. Horror swept through the suitors, faces blanching white, and Zeus cracked the sky with a bolt, his blazing sign, and the great man who had borne so much rejoiced at last that the son of cunning Cronus flung that omen down for him. He snatched a winged arrow lying bare on the board. The rest still bristled deep inside the quiver, soon to be tasted by all the feasters there. Setting shaft on the hand-grip, drawing the notch and bowstring back, back, right from his stool, just as he sat, but aiming straight and true, he let fly, and never missing an axe from the first axe-handle clean on through to the last and out, the shaft with its weighted brazen head shot free. "My son," Odysseus looked to Telemachus and said, "your guest sitting here in your house has not disgraced you. No missing the mark, look, and no long labour spent to string the bow. My strength's not broken yet. Not quite so frail as the mocking suitors thought. But the hour has come to serve our masters right. Supper in broad daylight, then two other revels. Song and dancing, all that crowns a feast." He paused with a warning nod, and at that sign Prince Telemachus, son of King Odysseus, girding his sharp sword on, clamping hand to spear, took his stand by a chair that flanked his father, his bronze spear-point glinting now like fire. Book 22. Slaughter in the Hall. Now stripping back his rags, Odysseus, master of craft and battle, vaulted onto the great threshold, gripping his bow and quiver, bristling arrows, and poured his flashing shafts before him, loosed his feet, and thundered out to all the suitors, "Look, your crucial test is finished now at last. But another target's left that no one's hit before. We'll see if I can hit it. Apollo, give me glory!" With that he trained a stabbing arrow on Antinous, just lifting a gorgeous golden loving cup in his hands, just tilting the two-handled goblet back to his lips, about to drain the wine and slaughter the last thing on the suitor's mind, who could dream that one foe in that crowd of feasters, however great his power, would bring down death on himself and black doom. But Odysseus aimed, and shot Antinous square in the throat, and the point went stabbing clean through the soft neck and out, and off to the side he pitched. The cup dropped from his grasp as the shaft sank home, and the man's life-blood came spurting out of his nostrils, thick red jets. A sudden thrust of his foot, he kicked away the table, food showered across the floor, the bread and meat soaked.